Money FM 89.3, best of weekends. International News Review.
Our International News Review today, Steve Okun with us, Senior Advisor at McLarty Associates, joining us as always. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, GVZ. Good morning, Cindy. I'm ready for our interaction.
Hey, Steve.
Looks like you got a new headset on. Is that some new gear you have there?
This is my workout gear because I forgot to charge my iPod. So.
They look a little bit like earrings from afar.
Hey, they look good. Yeah, they look very, very professional. Very professional. All right, Steve, so much happening in the world around us. Let's jump right into it. In China, corporations that took a stand, international corporations on human rights abuses in Xinjiang are now facing pushback, blowback from the Chinese government, which is cutting some of those companies off. What do we know about that?
Well, it's actually the pushback's not coming from the Chinese government. It's coming from the Chinese consumer. Mm. And what you see now is that the consumer has become much more empowered globally. And if you're a company, the actions you take in one country could have a much different consequence in another. And so what's happened in Xinjiang is a result of findings by the United States, the UK, and others that, in the United States, where it's genocide is occurring in Xinjiang, you have companies like Nike, like H&M, like Burberry saying, well, we're not going to source cotton from Xinjiang. Well, the Chinese consumer is saying, well, we don't believe that's happening in China. And you're selling, you're manufacturing in China, selling to us. And if you're not going to use our cotton, we're going to boycott you. So you're either going to get a boycott from the West, you may get a boycott from China. And it's becoming more and more difficult for companies to navigate the increasing political dynamics and the power the consumer is now having.
Yeah, and it's interesting how this nationalism, this idea of nationalism, is really taking root in something like this where it comes to human rights.
Well, it's you're seeing it across everything, and it's the rise of ESG and sustainability, and that companies are not supposed to just focus on the bottom line. Companies are supposed to be responsible citizens, responsible investors, responsible stewards. So what are you doing when it comes to the use of plastics? What are you doing when it comes to your greenhouse gas emissions? What are you doing when it comes to sourcing and not having forced labor or slave labor in your supply chain? And that's not just China. I mean, you have these issues of responsible sourcing all over the world and all over Southeast Asia and South Asia in particular. So it's something that has happened in the past. You saw the sweatshops in Bangladesh and the protests you had against, boycotting U.S. companies for sourcing from unsafe factories in Bangladesh. And it is now a concern globally, and it's going to become more and more difficult for companies to say they're a responsible investor, but consumers view what a responsible investor is differently depending on where they live.
Yeah. How do the companies get around this? Is there any way for them to get around this, or are they just going to have to take it on the chin?
I've heard some solutions where companies have, where people are saying, well, people should treat China is separate and apart from the rest of their business. So you have one company with a different name in China serving the Chinese market, complying with Chinese law. And then you have a different company in Japan, the UK, US, wherever it may be, with a different name and a different brand serving different customers with different standards. I don't see how that is going to be able to work in the long term. I don't see how a Chinese consumer is going to say, well, we're okay with you treating our country different than others. And I don't see the other customers doing the same. It's going to be very difficult. And it's really potentially going to come to a head with the 2020 Olympics and how businesses and sponsors are going to handle that. It's a real issue that companies are really trying to grapple with right now. And there is no easy solution.
Well, this takes us back to the 1980s and the boycotting of the Russian Olympics, right?
Yeah, but that was the government led, right? Mm-hmm. So that was different because it used to be that if you say, well, the U.S. has sanctions against, cotton, tomatoes, what have you in Xinjiang, therefore we have to comply with U.S. law. We don't have a choice. That was kind of accepted. Yeah. So that Chinese consumer isn't going to take that as an excuse. And furthermore, Russia in 1980 was the geostrategic competitor, right, to the U.S., but it wasn't the, it didn't have the economy, it didn't have the market, it didn't have U.S. businesses all over Russia selling to Russian consumers. So very different. And then you throw social media on top of that, in the ease in which it, you can organize a consumer boycott, and it's just a totally different world than it was, you know, 40 years ago in the 1980 Olympics.
Yeah, the power of the purse, Steve, is very strong. We know that. And when we look across to the U.S., activists there say that they are going to boycott Atlanta-based Coca-Cola and others for not condemning the newly passed law that's changing the voting laws in Georgia. We talked about that first thing in the show this morning with Andreas Preuss in Atlanta. And so we are seeing this financial activism happening in different places, are we not?
Absolutely. And I mean, it used to be more of a Western phenomenon. Now it is going to be a global phenomenon. Where it is going to be something outside of companies' controls. I mean, what the Georgia law is clearly aimed at changing the results from the last election on going forward elections, right? So it is clearly got elements of voter suppression in it. And because the companies did not speak out forcefully, some companies did not speak out forcefully against it, you're going to see consumer boycotts against those companies. You may see even a boycott of the baseball All-Star Game, which is supposed to take place in Atlanta in July. Mm-hmm. You're now having the players say, if the state of Georgia is going to blatantly discriminate against black people and making it more difficult for them to vote, we shouldn't have our All-Star Game there. And so that is another form of that consumer boycott, going after businesses for not doing what they should have done, and then boycotting the state, as was done in North Carolina when it passed laws that were against LGBTQ people in North Carolina and violated their civil rights. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole new dynamic that's building on what's happened in the past.
Steve, as Andreas Preuss said earlier today, it is a solution looking for a problem in that the Republican head of the elections in Georgia said that their elections were fine. They were not corrupted in any way. And yet still they've come out with these. Now, certain of these things are what would seem to most people to be reasonable, which is you need to produce an ID that says you're a voter in that state before you get your ballot. You know, there are certain things in here that, frankly, are not that bad, right?
Well, I'm going to take a different approach than Andreas did. And obviously, you know, I'm a Democrat. I've got that picture of Bill Clinton hanging up behind me from my time in the Clinton administration. This is not a solution in search of a problem. There was a problem. The Republicans lost in Georgia. That was the problem. What they have done is passed a law that gives a solution to that problem, makes it more difficult for Democrats to win. How do they do that? They do that because they make it tougher for poorer people, less educated people, and in particular, black people to vote. And that is outright voter suppression. And so what they have done is, you know, and we use the famous example there where you can't give water to people standing in line. Well, you know what? That doesn't affect white people. Why? Because the lines for white people to vote average 5 minutes. But the average line where black precincts are much more relevant is 61 minutes. And as you said earlier, it goes up to 6 hours. So why would you pass a law that says you can't give food or water to somebody in a line? You do that because you're hoping people will not get in line because they're older. They don't want to wait in line for hours. If they are in line, maybe they'll leave the line because they have to go eat or drink, and then they can't go back to vote. That's outright voter suppression. So that is the solution to the problem they have, which is what they lost. And there wasn't a problem, right? You had, you know, in fact, very famously, the Sidney Powell, who was a lawyer, who said there was all of these, you know, claims that the election was rigged, that the election was violated by governments of Venezuela. Well, she was then sued for defamation by the voting companies. And you know what her defense was? Her defense wasn't that, well, what I said was true, which is normally your defense in a defamation case. Her defense was, well, reasonable people would not accept such statements as fact. Right? So she's saying, so I will just say this is, you know, outright voter suppression. And that is why you have the boycotts that are coming against companies, potentially boycotts coming against the state. Yeah, there is a balance between voter integrity and voter suppression, but there were no problems of voter integrity in the last election.
Yeah. Our next topic is protests across U.S. cities on Saturday against Asian hate, hate speech, hate crimes. This comes to the fore after the March 16th shootings in Atlanta at some massage parlors there where people were killed. This is the latest, I guess, salvo in what started with the Black Lives Matter movement a little over a year ago.
Well, look, I mean, there is, you know, systemic racism in the United States, and it needs to get addressed. And if anything, it's getting worse. And part of this is the, look, there's always been, you know, discrimination against Asian Americans going back to, you know, when the railroads were getting built and you know, Chinese laborers to the United States in the 1800s couldn't become citizens. They were banned from becoming citizens because they were Chinese. I mean, this racism against Asians in the United States is not new. But when you overlay the pandemic on top of it with Donald Trump, you know, claiming that it is China's fault and it's the China virus and it's the you know, Kung flu and Wuhan flu and all those other racist statements that were made, that adds fuel to the fire. And so it's gotten, you know, even worse, and something is going to need to be done. But this is a problem the United States has faced, you know, for more than a century. It's not going to get solved soon, but maybe we've come to a point where now there is a public recognition that changes need to be made. Changes need to be made on not necessarily on policing, but on how police investigate these types of crimes, how they would go after the criminals who are engaged in these violent attacks against American citizens and visitors to the United States.
Steve, at what point does all of this impact the American businesses overseas? You know, we've got 4,000 U.S. businesses based in Singapore, massive trade between the two countries. You know, people were seeing in the last 4 years how the American image was very much tarnished overseas on certain elements of what was being talked about and the unilateralism, et cetera. Where does the U.S. go now? I mean, is the Biden administration going to be able to turn around that perception with people who have it?
Well, I mean, I think there's two things. I think for those of us who work in the, you know, business community here, you know, we show firsthand the power of, you know, working multiculturally, working together, where you bring such a diverse group from all over, you know, the world, but of course anchored here in Singapore, and when your business is headquartered here, led, you know, with such a strong Singaporean core, and that this is what makes businesses better, right? This is what makes, you know, people better. It's what enriches us. And so maybe we can be a little bit of a model to show people back in the United States, this is the strength of diversity. This is a strength of working cross-culturally. So that may be one option, but, you know, I could certainly see where you know, you want to strengthen your business. You want to send, you know, not only the expats coming here from the US, UK, Australia, you know, New Zealand, wherever it may be, Japan, yeah, Korea, but you want to send people from here back to the United States. Are they going to be thinking twice? Am I going to be, you know, safe? Am I going to be physically safe, or am I going to at least, you know, not be, you know, subject to verbal abuse? And so it can hurt the business community. So I think the business community has a role to play advocating for solutions to what's happening in the U.S. But it's as everything we've talked about, voter suppression, you know, how you balance the U.S. and China, how you deal with the you know, what's happening in Xinjiang, where you have two very different views from two different very consumer groups. No easy answers.
Yeah, it's it is a difficult a difficult systemic problem that is literally hundreds of years old. So all the people that are out there protesting are standing up against it, and we will see what happens with that. Let's end on a positive note. You and many others now, because you're a man of a certain age, are now eligible to get your COVID vaccine here in Singapore, and you've gotten your appointment, right?
Let me just, you are also of that certain age.
I'm feeling really young.
Cindy is not. She's nowhere near being in the next batch of people to get their jabs. So good for her.
I'm not that far off. Really.
Well, you're way off of me and Glenn, that's for sure.
Indeed.
You know, it's great. I mean, Singapore is, you know, not surprisingly doing a very thorough and efficient job making sure that you everybody gets vaccinated who lives here, regardless if you're if you're a citizen or if you're a permanent resident or you're here on an employment pass. You just need to make sure that everybody here gets vaccinated, because once that can occur, and if you find that being vaccinated not only prevents you from getting the disease but lowers the rate of transmission, then we can start getting what we all want, which of course are these travel bubbles to launch. And that's literally the first question I get, in which we all ask each other, where are you going to go when you can start traveling again? And I'm like, wherever they'll let me go and come back without doing a stay home notice. That's my first place.
I think Phuket has
Australia,
opened up.
New Zealand, Bintan. Sorry, Cindy.
Sorry, I was just saying that, you know, I think Phuket has actually opened up for people who would have done the vaccination.
July. Yeah, right? Yeah, July 1st. Yeah. But the question is, do you need to quarantine when you come back?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right.
Yeah, and do you need to get swapped again? Because that's really uncomfortable.
I don't know.
Oh, I'll get swabbed. You know, that's not that bad. I'll get swabbed again. I've been swabbed once. I'll get swabbed again. I just don't want to have to stay in a room for 14 days. So if I can go to Phuket and come back, if I can go to Bintan and come back, sign me up. I'm ready.
All right. And don't forget your friends when you're booking the villa, the seaside villa that's got extra rooms. You know who else to call to get you to get keep you company over there. Steve Hogan, thanks. Go ahead.
I will do, Glenn. We'll get the clubs and we'll get out as quickly as possible.
Sounds great. Steve, thanks so much for being with us today on our usual International News Review.
Thanks, JVZ. Nice seeing you, Cindy.
International News Review. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.